Welcome to the Prepared Mindset Podcast, everyone. I am your host, Austin, and welcome to the very first episode, well, complete episode of the 2026 calendar year. Hard to believe, right? 25 is over in the rear view. We're in a brand new year, new me. Oh my God. Yeah, it's wonderful, right? Personally, already out dealing with the gym, with the people who make their New Year's resolution to be more fit, more healthy, which is great. I'm not saying that you shouldn't do those things. I think that increasing your personal health and your overall fitness, lifting weights and stuff, I think that's absolutely fantastic. And I think, yeah, definitely when looking at society right now, we should certainly see more people engaging in those healthy activities, right? I just don't enjoy or appreciate having to fight through this massive crowd of people to get to the equipment, to utilize the free weights, to even just have space, right? Some of those exercises and things where you just need space, like split squats, or I mean, the gym I go to only has, technically they have one squat rack and then they, sorry, two squat racks and two Smith machines, which the last time I used a Smith machine, right, I pulled something very major in my back and have vowed to never again return to the Smith machine for any kind of squats or exercise or anything else. I will pretty exclusively be using an actual squat rack for those exercises, but I digress, right? Having to fight with people, or you get some of those individuals there, like this is of course in addition to, right, the people that will go camp out at a squat rack or a deadlift station, whatever you want to call it, right? For, I mean, I've had people that they're there the entire 2-hour workout that I'm there. I'll walk in, I'll catch them out the corner of my eyes, I'm coming in, I'll do my 10-minute warm-up, I'll go do 30, 45, an hour of weightlifting, I'll go over and check that, because that's what I want to end with, they're still there. I go over and I do my 25 or 30 minutes of cardio, and then I come back and they're still there, and it's like, dude, please, for love of God, like, go do something else. And then when you ask them, I've actually, my wife asked one of these people after like an hour or an hour and a half, hey, are you going to be done soon? And they go, oh, well, I'm just finishing my warm-up now. And it's like, that's got to be one of the most convoluted warm-up processes I think I've ever come across personally. But, you know, you guys don't, you know, I mean, we all deal with it, right? It is what it is. No amount of complaining from me is going to change that. But I do hope everyone is getting out there, getting healthier, being more fit, right, as the new year rolls on. And actually, one of the big things for me this year for 2026, a big event, I want to say it's a goal, because it, like, you can literally buy this. You can, I feel like it's less a goal if it's something you can buy. But I am going to SHOT Show not next week, but the week after, I will be in Las Vegas, Nevada for SHOT Show. And I'm already looking forward to making connections with several people, right? Some people who actually, at this point, all people who have been on the podcast. So I'm going to catch up with Dan from Dynamic Principles and Walsh from Thin Line Defense. I'm going to catch up with Nick Keitlicka from Leopold Optics. Can't wait to see Nick and meet him. Jason Demo, who's been on, going to connect with him and hopefully find a place to go watch the college football championship game that Monday and get to meet Ratchet, the canine of his. And that's going to be really exciting for, let's be honest, mostly my wife, because she just loves dogs. But looking forward to all of that stuff. And I was talking about SHOT Show with a buddy that runs a training company a couple weeks back, actually. And talking about, you know, civilians in the preparedness space and people who, you know, are that individual, and we can all picture them in our mind's eye, right? Oh, I'd want to go serve. Oh, I want to do something. I want to be viewed as the expert in the room. I want to have the credentials or the respect. And I think if you're chasing the attention of other men, and that's why you're going to do something like public service, whether that's the military or law enforcement or search and rescue or whatever have you, right? Security, right? I think you're doing those things for the wrong reasons. That's me personally. And you guys can take that however you want. Like, I work in finance. So I've had people leave me shitty messages like that before. I had people tell me, oh, I don't get to work from a desk at my house all day. I'm out here in the world dealing with the worst people of the worst. And I'm like, it's not a competition, bro. Like, either you are a smart, educated, trained, and competent man, or you're fucking not. But having that conversation with a buddy and mentioned, like, yeah, you know, we got into SHOT Show, and it's like, yeah, you know, even some of these casinos, right? Because if you guys have ever been to Vegas, and I guess if you haven't, these casinos are absolutely huge. Like, you look at structures like the Luxor, the huge pyramid out there at the end of the strip, they have like 4,400 rooms You know, these are huge, huge, huge buildings, and they're more like compounds, honestly, because it could take you 5-10 minutes to walk from one side to the other, if not longer. I'm just talking about like walking down the strip to get from one side to the other with traffic and everything else. These are huge places. So if you put yourself in the context of, you know, hey, what would I do if me as a, even if I had like a 25 man SWAT team, what would I do if I had to like lock one of those places down and clear it with the team and, you know, shit like that, right? Well, as it so happens, these buildings, these companies, they employ teams of individuals that are similar to a SWAT team or an SRT team of sorts, right? And if you guys think back to like Ocean's 11, when they have the alarms go off and there's the whole, you know, riot squad looking team, they got like the big puffy armor and helmets with the visors and everything. They're they're all lined up going and they run into the vault, you know, when the power goes out and everything. These kinds of teams actually do exist out in Las Vegas. And I don't know for sure if every single casino, because they're all different sizes, right? Like the ones on the strip are pretty large. But as you get further away from the strip and you get into Old Vegas, those are less so. Those are smaller. But I'm sure some of these large ones for sure have these teams, these reactive elements, right, who can respond to emergencies, whether that's medical, something like you know, potential mass shooter incident, those kinds of things, right? And basically, hey, you know, there are those teams exist. I go, I had no idea, man. I mean, it makes sense. And now that you say it out loud, I start thinking, I think about Ocean's 11 and that scene and everything. And he goes, hey, I have a buddy who is actually involved with this stuff and I can get you in touch with them. So my guest for this week's discussion is Gabe Hancock, who's actually out in Vegas. He works on one of these teams and serves a, like, I was looking at his LinkedIn. I was talking to my buddy about him and everything and just talking to him a little bit. And he actually wears several hats in this regard. So I don't even want to tell you guys in advance here all the different things that Gabe does. I will say that if you look at his like resume or his LinkedIn or whatever, there's like EMT and executive protection and a whole lot more that is rolled up into this. So this should be a really unique discussion as far as guests I've had on go, because this is something that's, I think, off the beaten path when we look at tactical teams and training and capability and things like that, but still something that's incredibly relevant in the world because, I mean, Vegas is not the only place we have resorts and casinos and things like this. So these private types of teams, they do exist outside of the law enforcement space. So I'm very interested to see and hear everything Gabe has to share. But before I get over to my conversation with Gabe for this week, we do have to say thank you to our presenting sponsor of the Prepared Mindset Podcast. If you guys are joining us for the first time, welcome in. But if you're a return repeat listener, you know that without our sponsors, we wouldn't be able to do this week in, week out. We wouldn't be able to do our monthly sit reps and produce the content we do on our YouTube page. Shameless plug, go subscribe on YouTube. We are almost to 5,000. But with that, I want to say thank you to our supporting sponsor, the guys over at Custom Night Vision. Their website is customnightvision.com. And if you guys are looking to get into a night optics device or NODs, right, head on over to the website. And right there on the homepage, they have two big blue buttons to build a monocular unit or a binocular unit, right? So one tube or two tubes. One tube if you're balling on a budget, two tubes if you're buying once and crying once. And whatever you're looking for, I could almost guarantee you that the team over at Custom will be able to take care of you and help you out. And that's whether you know what you're looking for or you have absolutely no idea. If you have no clue, that's okay. A lot of us walk into this and have no idea what FOM means or, you know, signal to noise ratio or what any of those numbers and stats and things on the spec sheet really mean and how they translate over into the experience that we're going to have as end users. That's why Custom Night Vision's goal is to provide every customer with the most transparent purchasing experience that they possibly can. When you head over to the website, there's a little icon in the lower right-hand corner. That's the chat icon. You can open up the chat window and you can connect directly with Ben or Kevin or Trevor, one of the guys over at Custom, and they're going to walk you through the process. They're going to explain the difference between Elbit and L3, what you're giving up, what you're taking, you know, the advantages, the pros, the cons, all those good things, tubes like NNVT, Photonis, you know, Elbit systems, what it all means, what you should be looking for. They're going to ask you about your use case, what you need, and they're going to get you in a tailored solution to make sure you're super happy and super capable. You guys, Night Vision is, it's fantastic. Like, I don't even know how else to say it. Night Vision is absolutely fantastic. It's referred to as by many, right, as the superpower that you can buy. And until you experience it, man, you probably just laugh at that, but it really is something to behold, man. I absolutely love night vision, and it is a ton of fun, and it's a huge capability when we're talking about our overall and individual preparedness, let alone preparedness in a team. You guys can head on over to customnightvision.com. That's their website. Let them know that Austin from Prepared Mindset sent you guys over. They're going to take fantastic care of you. They're a wonderful company based out of Houston, Texas, doing great, great work, and we're so, so proud to be partnered with them. So big thanks to Custom Night Vision for being our supporting sponsor here at the Prepared Mindset Podcast, you guys. Like I said, this week's discussion, I'm sitting down with Gabe Hancock. We're going to get into, like, honestly, I don't even know. You know, I've usually been able to go into most discussions with most guests and have a pretty good idea of what to expect, what I can, you know, guess we're going to touch on, where their approximate experience came from, how they ended up doing whatever thing that guest does, you know, their line of work, their path in life, you know, all that good stuff. Here, man, I can honestly say for the first time in a very long time, I don't know if I have any idea what to expect here. I feel like I'm going in completely blind, man. This is wild. It should be a really, really enlightening and a very fun conversation, I'm expecting. So with that, I will go ahead and cut us on over to my conversation with Gabe. Here we go, guys. Gabe, welcome to the Prepared Mindset, man. How are you?
Great, man. Happy to be here.
Dude, I'm looking forward to this. As soon as I even found out that who you are or what you do is like a thing in the world, I was immediately interested. So we have a mutual friend that put us in contact. He was talking to me about it, and I'm like, you know, immediately when he started talking about, I don't even know what to call some of the teams and stuff that function in the Vegas area. It's like a personal or private SWAT team type thing. He said it, and I was like, oh yeah, kind of, you know, Ocean's 11, when they all have like the huge body armor and riot masks on and they rush into the vault for whatever stupid ass reason. I was like, yeah, I guess it does make sense, but I don't know if that's realistic or if that's just, you know, shit they do for Hollywood. But hopefully we can clear some of that up through this conversation, man. I'm sure we'll get into a ton of cool stuff. Can you go ahead and just introduce yourself to the listeners and maybe talk a bit about what you do? Cause I think a lot of it's pretty damn unique.
Yeah. So I'm Gabriel. I started this career 12 plus years ago, at a local casino out here at Aria. Did a little part-time thing, sought for the private sector, wanted to get armed. Well, didn't grow up around guns, nothing like that. It was just always a thing that intrigued me. You know, my family in Colorado are all super cowboy mountain men, but not out here in Vegas. So I took kind of a little pivot, if you would. Got in the private sector, joined an SRT team, making dog crap money, thinking I was so cool, risking everything. I was actually in an area where MS-13 at the time was digging really deep roots. And then another side of town I worked on was a bunch of Crips out here. So I had no idea how in over my head I was at all at the time. But hindsight, you know, hindsight's 20/20. So as I kind of fastballed things, I went to Colorado, tried a small town thing with fam for a while, got into youth corrections, went to criminally insane, and I got my rotator cuff torn out and it got real messy. And I just thought, hey, I want to go back to where I'm from. Got into some behind the scenes when dispensaries were first going to become a thing for some big cash transport, because that's how that whole industry works.
Yeah.
Dove really deep into the executive protection realm and the personal protection. Focus in on a lot of like the covert stuff, and no diss to anyone, not a lot of the polos and areas. I have gotten into like the conventions, which is they focus on a thing called DRT now, which is really interesting. They try to avoid all those, you know, anything tactical security terms, but they're called disruptive response teams. And you just walk around with the lanyard and blend in, and then whatever happens, you respond to accordingly. But it's been a plethora. I got the opportunity to go into Op 4. Which has been, I think, one of the biggest cheat codes of my life. I did not have to join the military. The corrections was enough to get me in through a referral, friend of a friend. And I made some lifelong friends out there, and I've gotten to see a lot of topics that everyone wants to be SMEs on.
Mm-hmm.
Just playing out in front of my face, things that work, don't work, and tech and all kinds of real cool things. Watching working dogs. I've got a retired sniff dog, so he's not a bite or anything. But watching a dog come at people is just, it's It's wild. It's like a Michael Bay film. It's the best way to explain it. Like I feel like I'm just watching Michael Bay's budget in front of me.
Yeah.
So, super awesome experience. And then now I'm at a local property, managing a shift. We do have what we call ERT, emergency response team. Every shift has one. They're capable, but they're not as the high speed as people have seen, especially with shots. So everyone's going to be familiar with this. So I'm not blowing up anyone's spot, but you guys, whoever attends, always see Caesar's SRT walk around ERT. So they're familiar to an extent. They have greens sometimes, grays, et cetera. They look like SWAT a little bit. A lot of those guys, I've happened to train at a facility that I run out here. It's called LVTC. It's right behind the Rio. It's a 5,000 square foot shoot house and dojo. So that's where, if anyone follows me later on here, I kind of keep things pretty private. But that local spot is something I've been really blessed to collab with, like Estrellas Co., who's become a really good friend of mine, Cage Defiance, who's a medic, and then Aaron Malden, who's a mentor in the EP space worldwide, and then Mike Marsh. We've built a thing called TMEP, which is tactical medicine for executive protection, and that's something we've taken on the road now, which has been a really cool experience because I didn't realize how much I loved the medicine portion of fixing people, saving them, not just the sexy punch holes, and I'm really cool.
Yeah. That's a awful lot to fit into 12 years. Like I've been working in my career field and for 14 and I could not make my stuff sound, I mean, granted it's finance, so it's already not as exciting, but I could not make mine sound like I had done as much as you've done in that amount of time. That's wild, dude.
It's a grind for sure. I always have to write that down because it's hard for me to like realize how big that road and path's been. And I'm not, I guess that too, I'm not satisfied, right? I'm not satisfied in my skill set. I'm not satisfied in like the mentorship. That's the biggest part to me. And then even like, yeah, the money factor and the time. Like to me, the biggest like attaboy to myself will be that moment where the physical gone is less than the administrative side and the networking, but we're getting there. So I'm really happy and it's super cool and surreal, honestly, to talk to you and to be on here because yeah, I've been a fan for years. I've been listening on and off. I'm pretty sure the LVTC page when I was running that Instagram, I'm pretty sure we exchanged a couple times and followed each other. So this is pretty rad. Like this is a really full circle moment. So I'm super happy and blessed.
Yeah, that's wild for me, because like seeing that come full circle, I'm like, because I don't, I mean, you know, I don't want to sound like a turd or nothing, but it's just, you know, everything kind of blurs together, and then people sit down, and they're like, yeah, I've been listening to you for years. I'm like, years, huh? Like, yeah, I guess it has been, you know, a hot minute since I started this whole thing, and you know, and all that good stuff. So that is wild, and I appreciate that a lot, actually. It's crazy, like being able to make those connections, kind of like a second time around.
Absolutely.
But with the so the thing that I find the most interesting about like all of that stuff that you just rattled off and talked about, you talk about those. I think you said it was like response teams, right? So disruptive response or emergency response teams, things like that. When you put that into perspective for folks, like for people listening who've never been to Vegas, right? It's hard to imagine. People told me before I first went in 2018. I got married in May of 2018 in Vegas, and absolutely fucking loved it. Like, amazing, amazing experience. I recommend it to anybody. but some of those properties, like specifically, I'm thinking like the main strip, right? So I think at one end, the furthest one out is Mandalay Bay, and then down the strip, I think it ends with the Stratosphere or Treasure Island, something I
Yeah,
think.
the
Yeah.
strat is where it ends.
Okay. And some of those properties, I had people tell me, like, dude, it's going to take you 5 or 10 minutes just to get from one side of it to the other. I'm like, nah, I mean, you're a little bit older, you're a little bit shorter. I'll be fine. And you dude, it genuinely can take you that long just to on foot traverse it in a straight line. So these are massive, massive properties. And when you start talking about some of them, and I watched, you know, just this off the top of my head, because I watched a couple of videos the other day. Like, I know the Luxor, which is the huge pyramid, has like 4,400 rooms. That's not counting all the other space and shit that takes up the gaming floor. And when they have shows, like these are
Oh yeah.
huge facilities, man. How do you even begin to like deal with the concept of like, hey, we have a mass emergency, and that doesn't have to be necessarily be violent. It could be anything, right? Where does like how does that, and I don't know how much you can share, but like how does the training and the preparation even work for something on that scale? Like, how many individuals even go into a team like that where you have to cover that much ground? Because I think like a conventional SWAT team is usually around 20 or 24 guys. I don't even think that would be enough, personally, but I don't know.
Yeah, so each company and property, they're unique to how they do things. We talked before, Mandalay Bay and Caesars, they own a majority of the strip. So I kind of know how they function. I've gotten to train with a couple of those guys and those teams, really good people. The breakdown, so like the easiest way to say it at the start is like the officer spot, the regular inside officers, regular bike officers. Some are armed, some aren't. Most of the inside will not be armed unless they're management or ERT. And then sometimes for conventions, they'll bring third party, and I've worked a few of those too, and they're fun. So there's a huge disconnect. I'll start with that. I'll do the elephant in the room. There's a massive training disconnect across how everyone does it. There's no set standard. There's no bar line. There's no minimum. There's no, hey, we set the bar. Wynn is a very high end. It's a really good example. The Wynn is a very high end property. They have SOG teams, which they look like fly fishermen, but they're armed units that are plain clothes and they're close protection guys. I don't know why they chose that uniform, but yeah,
Do
it's
they
weird.
literally wear like the old school like tack vests and everything?
It is so hard to explain. If you pull up there and you see the valet, you won't tell the difference between a valet and a SOG guy. And I think it's on purpose, but it's super interesting. It's the best word I could use.
Fair
They're
enough.
good guys, nice guys. And they have a lot of door posts and they have a lot, like you're saying, they have a lot of that manpower that a lot of other properties kind of get away from and kind of labor security. The biggest thing is security is a non-revenue generating department for casinos. So as much and the importance that we play in the role we play, we are not viewed like that from a quarterly earnings
Well, I
board
mean,
meeting.
but so I work in finance, so I will say that to that point, the two things that any financial institution will look at is how to make money, and then the second one, not far after, is how to keep money. So I know it's a little bit different in the hospitality sector in that. I mean, you're protecting it from physical threats, but rather than like electronic fraud and stuff, but
Definitely.
still, like that's still a big part of how the hell you keep your money.
Definitely. No, yeah. And especially like the biggest thing for us that people they have a hard time with to really be successful in this industry, at least on the casino hospitality side, is the liability portion. So you always have to be thinking when I'm interacting with a guest that's in crisis, even they're losing their mind. Maybe they're about to fight, maybe they are fighting, having a mental breakdown, whatever it is. It's responding in a sense of, okay, yes, if people are fighting, you separate them, you detain if you have to, but then you have to have that 30,000-foot view fast, like really fast. I treat that kind of like CQB, the way we talk about, we have a quote, I'm gonna butcher it to death, but it's like CPU. So you're processing data. The more you do CQB, as I'm sure you can relate, the faster you start to process. So your graphics card, your CPU starts to go faster and faster and faster. And to some people,
100%.
like they'll watch you and be like, excuse me? And then they'll say, hey, like, what did you see? And I'm like, yeah, I saw this target. I saw this guy. I saw this under the table. I saw this had a skirt, whatever it is. And then they'll start to do it and they're like, wow. And they beat themselves up. And I'm like, no, man, it's repetition. So in this industry, I've failed miserably. Like, I'll be the first to say I have made the wrong calls. I have assumed whatever. And I've learned from that instead of just being miserable, beating myself up. And I've had really good mentors. This side for the inside, there usually is a good amount of bodies. There should be a good amount of bike patrols. And then ERT, as much as you think it's massive, certain properties do have some teams that the size I am super jealous of, like hands down. The team I work with is small, it's tight-knit. They are very capable, from their guest service to how they deal with everyone, interacting and team members to how they deal with crisis incidents and medicals is phenomenal. I haven't been to this new property long, but I've been blessed to witness them in some serious incidents, including even like alarm activations, because in a casino it's going to tell you we're investigating, blah, blah. And people, especially foreigners, they are not hearing a word it says. They're just hearing a robot scream, lights, the strobe, the siren, and it's just chaos. So it's that, even the simple stuff, responding and say, hey, we're trying to figure it out, guys. So sorry about the disruption. Just give us a moment. And then we'll announce it to them, front desk. We'll answer their calls. We have really good communication between all of the departments too, which is, to me, that's what really makes these teams fail or succeed, is when you talk about, like, okay, if this mass incident happens, how do you coordinate? Well, it's super clear and concise communication, great radio etiquette, because that is the most ignored thing in the
Oh
world.
yeah, and super
Oh my
overlooked. Yeah, it's
gosh.
bad.
And the, yeah. And then, like, honestly, it's the real simplicity of having a good rapport with other departments that you can call on the fly and be like, hey, this is what's going on, or I need more info on this, help me out. And a really good surveillance team. They are those secret squirrels that will never be seen by most people besides management. And they can make or break an incident that is going on in real time, because if they can track and they're great with it, and you have good camera coverage and good quality, they will save your life, and save
Oh,
others too.
so you're talking about like literally people behind cameras, like in a control room, like
Yes.
watching. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh,
Yeah.
I always assumed it was the 80-year-olds that played the same slot machine for 6 hours. Like,
No, so there, it's interesting, is we'll certain properties will have like a dispatcher, and they'll have limited access to cameras, as well as running all of the incidents going on, right? Even simplicity of like brakes and stuff like that, and a guest needs a wheelchair assist, right? Whatever the fact is. But the surveillance team watches all those gaming specific things that people really get themselves hemmed up for in Vegas. Capping bets, throwing extra money on the table when it's not supposed to. Like, those, we have the most unique thing in the world, which is the gaming control board, and those are felonies, like off rip. Like a $5 cap on a bet, even if you just won 10 bucks, felony. Like, and it is a wild thing to
So
explain to
wait, so
people.
you're saying like if the table has a $5 maximum bet and they leave $10 down, is
So no,
that
let's say you won $10 on whatever, it
okay?
doesn't matter. And dealers going around on craps. This is the easiest way to explain, because everyone's around a table. So they're paying everyone out. And then you kind of think, oh, I'm going to be sly. I'm going to add an extra five so I get a bigger payout. To instantaneously, as soon as that's caught, felony.
Felony.
And
Yeah.
anyone you don't know, they're really understanding. We're really understanding. It's, but that's also, again, how good is people's skill set to investigate and build rapport off, like, fastball it? Because you got to look at someone, and you got to determine quick if they're full of it. And it's definitely a trained skill. You cannot look. It's funny because you said 80-year-olds. I've had gaming cheats that were 80 years old. They've been arrested several times, and they just keep getting those felonies. Like, it's mind-boggling.
It's like grandma,
Oh
no.
yeah. Like, you're normally, put them in cuffs and everything, but you're just like, man, can you just walk with me? And they're like, yeah. And it's just like, what is happening? And then other people that are, yeah, they're instantly, you're fighting in the pit, which is arguably the worst, worst place in the world, because the entire, every eye, every camera, when we talk about liability, is coming out, and they're spinning it. And
Well, and that's tough too, because like I feel like you just said, right? You have to be able to process and understand like really what's going on, because not I feel like just looking at it, right? I don't gamble. I really don't. So if I was one of those people that walked up to any game, right? People have to understand it's not all just regular blackjack and just regular craps. There's other variations of all these different games. And if you don't gamble, you don't understand the rules. It could legitimately just be that people are making a mistake out of ignorance, right? It's kind of
yep.
innocent, you know. And then also you have people that are on the opposite side of that, where they're like, hey, no, I'm doing this on purpose to try and work it. And on top of that, you have alcohol, like a lot of alcohol thrown into the mix. Which is one of the things I love about Vegas, is it's the only place in the world, at least that I know of now, that as long as you're gambling, you drink. Like for I think it's still that way. I haven't been there in about 8 years, but that was my parents told me that. I was like, no, come on, you guys got married in like the 70s, man, or early 80s. No, yeah, early 80s. And I'm like, yeah, that's not a thing anymore. Nobody does free anything. And when I went to New York, and I sat down, a lady walks up, she's like, would you like a drink? I was like, oh, yes, I would. And I'm like, damn, all right, cool. So yeah, I was, and I remember this distinctly. I don't think I ever had a hangover on my wedding trip. And I don't know if that's because I was just consistently drunk the entire time, or if it was something with the climate or something, but I felt great the whole trip. It was wonderful.
Yeah, they a lot of them now too. It's super simple. Like a lot of them will be even like some properties $1 to $5, as long as that is at least in the machine and they walk by, they'll honor that. Especially like at the bars, they're like, hey, just put, put something in there so that your drinks are comped, like you're saying. Yeah, and that usually continues. Like it's a great factor because that leads to, food sales, and then they'll start talking about stuff on a property that you could do, like we talked about, like if there's Cirque du Soleil's and Blue Man Groups and all that stuff. So that just gets people in. The buffet was always the one. COVID really nailed that coffin, but buffets were always a factor that lost money, but they were just to get people to spend money. That was their entire existence, which sucks because locals, we all loved them, but the buffets were, yeah, it was like, hey, let me get you a comp because you gambled. And they're like, cool, we just lost a bunch of money, but hopefully. And then for a while they did, but after COVID, it never regulated again. And with all the restrictions with food and masks, they were like, forget it. Like, this is
I'm
not
gonna
going
go
to be.
eat my weight in crab legs at the buffet to make up for the
Oh,
$500 I
man.
just yeah.
Exactly.
But so you have all of these different departments and teams coming together. So it's not unlike other, I guess other like I don't want to say like mall security because that's a way oversimplification, but it's sort of like that, but it's at a much grander scale with a lot more on the line in terms of what you have to lose.
Precisely. Yeah.
So with some of these teams and I'm sure for extreme instances and where you have to respond and stuff like that, you have, I think, is it, would it be like an ERT, some kind of the
Yeah,
emergency response
emergency
team?
response team.
And that would be, if I'm thinking about this correctly, would that be like a local law enforcement, like SWAT team semi equivalent, where they're going to respond to a violent threat to, maybe like a mass shooter incident, God forbid, right? Something like that. Is that what that would be?
Yeah, so basically, like the way we like to talk about things is everyone's an ambassador, and the whole focus is guest service. And then from like the EP world, I focus on white glove service. So it's taking that above and beyond to treat guests and team members to the highest degree. Like exactly how like what's so lost in everything today, as I'm sure anyone listening is going to relate. When you call somewhere and you talk to a robot, or you go somewhere and they just don't care. Like they don't, there is no, oh, bad day. Like, no, people are so self-centered, entitled that the service industry is garbage on every level. So I like to, instead of whining about it in a very different realm of the world, I like to give people that with protection. Like, hey, I'm not like the biggest, buffest, brawn, nice, brazen chin dude in the world. So I'm a good sized dude, but I want to go in there and instantaneously make them laugh. Like make them like, hey, I'm here to protect you, but we're gonna have a good time, and I'm gonna make you feel like I'm not here, right on your, right on your six. And if you need me to be, fine. Like I've had families and kids that I had to be close to, for the EP side and the private side, and that's fine. At work, that yeah, like you said, it is that high risk element, right? That active shooter, that mass shooter, or like a fire that has gone out of control. That we're at the time of year where I like to call them residentially challenged, and there's a lot of them here, aka homeless. I need to copyright that one day, but they will make fires and do crazy stuff just to get out of the extremes. And most of the time, like, people deal like, oh, like blah blah blah, I hate them, this, that, and the third. I like what helps me, even when I'm feeling like that or thinking that, is like, what would I do to get shelter? Like, what would I do if I was freezing to death, sweating to death? Because this place can burn your brain, literally will fry your brain if you can't cool down. And that's how, like, when I approach them, yeah, sometimes, they're going to lose their handle. And if they're threatening people, I handle it accordingly. But when you try to shift that mindset, you're able to separate yourself. But that ERT side, they are there to do exactly what everyone else is doing. But when shit hits the fan, they are there to. Yeah, to distinguish it and execute it. And if it goes to the extreme of, barricaded suspects, et cetera, we have a really good working relationship with local metro that are actually in our area command. They're not just, hey, we're going to call and hopefully we get someone good. We know we have a lot of the same repeat officers that come, and we call them by name. They call us by name. And then I know a few local SWAT dudes. I've gotten to train with them, so I can kind of get on the beat if that's going to go that bad. We've had a few like jump out boys come through, which is a really fun fun op because we talked about this before. Like you can plan everything, right? A, B, C, D, F, G, and then all those things fall through because someone goes, "Hey, the door is accessed through a room key only. How are we going to get in?" And I'm like, "Well, I guess you do need me now." And it's just, and luckily, they don't know me, but luckily I had a background where I knew how to open a door and knew how to be in a stack and get out of the way. So lay down. So being diverse really helps. That's the big thing. I feel like there's people that have been doing this for years, right? They were security officers and they climbed the ranks to directors and vice presidents and anything else you can do. But if they didn't diversify at some point, they're thinking in such a small box when things happen. And they're not wrong, I'd say, but they get really tunnel visioned. And I see that a lot in a lot of different things. I see that in cops, I see that in military guys I train with. And to have this diverse, I guess, background of not realizing like how many different hats my big giant dome piece has worn. That's what's brought me to be like, dang, okay, I haven't like gone to one area to learn from people. I don't like talking to only one kind of people and learning. Like I love, video games and art and I put nods on to watch the stars with my kids all the time. Like not the typical like, yeah, dude, I go and take photos all the time. Like, no, like I still enjoy the simple things, and I think that's what's gotten me to just kind of always stay open-minded. Like I know I'm gonna learn, like by the time this finishes, you're gonna teach me something just because I want to. I'm hungry, right? I think was it a few days before you messaged me, I was actually in the middle of and finished 2 days later that last one with the newest Core Vision cadre. So
Oh, Steve,
I got to train with those guys locally here and a Richie from Raw Tactics and God, amazing dudes. Was super, super lucky that I missed one a couple years prior to that. A situation happened at an old property I was at, and I got hung up until like 6 a.m. on a detainment, which was horrible.
Whoa.
So I couldn't go the next day, but they honored it 2 years later, my same payment. So super, super rad of them. Really great guys. And then a couple local dudes I know who I'm not going to name, know them pretty well. All the way up that Icarus Precision realm. But yeah, those are great dudes. And a lot of ERT guys have popped in and out of there too. The guys that really take it serious from my property and from others. So it's a really cool, I feel like that melting pot is what people really need, especially in this. I don't even know how to give it a name anymore because I'm pretty jaded with, the 2A or the tactical space. And but I've gotten really blessed. End up last year I attended SHOT for like one day, but I was kind of just, I don't even have a word for it, but I was just kind of over it in a way. I like to have like org
Desensitized.
yeah, and I like to have organic like conversations, relationships, and I just wasn't finding it there. I end up meeting Black Triangle, who I'm a big fangirl. I will be the first to say it. Oh my God. Especially in EP, non-metallic tools for certain places you go. It's you cannot take weapon systems. You could take like a small flashlight. So being a fan of them for years, I got to meet them last year, which was really cool. And actually the suite they were in overlooked our facility as the facility was first getting started. So that was a cool experience for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds, and that's the thing. I think with everything you just said, like the mindset about all of it, that like amalgamation of sources and inputs and perspectives. I think that you hear that a lot in the community. I don't think you see it preached as much as you hear it. A lot of guys, it's really easy to say like, dude, I want to hear from everybody. I want to form my own ideas on X, Y, Z, whatever. Whether it's executive protection, CQB, all the above. Whatever. But not a lot of people actually do it. I think, especially in the day and age of like social media, it's said a lot. It's just seldom practiced. But I think based off of what you've said and your particular, I guess, path that you've taken to get where you ended up, I think that that's more of a demonstration of that belief than just a repetition of that. And with that, with the training side of it, like I guess that's a unique part of things too, when you look at how these teams function and have to work together. And I don't know if you have any insight on it, but how, with everyone being different, right? So you'd mentioned that every property on the strip has a team, but they're all privately owned and organized and everything, so it's all different. How do training standards work there? Is it like a close partnership with local PD and you borrow from their structure and what they recommend? Or is there just enough private, I guess enough experience on these private organizations that you guys are able to put together your own training curriculum, standards, qualifications, things like that?
So, at my current company, I came in there to kind of focus on that realm, and there's been a lot of, timing is everything. There's been a lot of movement lately that the simplest, like regular SOPs, et cetera, are being revised. So we haven't gotten to the weeds of that. But what you're saying on the other side, on the private sector for like the TMEP class that I've created with Mike Marsh, he's out of Texas. That is exactly what you're saying. So I've picked the brains of my local PD. I picked the brains of SWAT here. I've also taken how I've watched naval teams, is what I'll say, and then a
Okay.
couple tier one units, how they function in some SOPs and picking their brains, and then private contractors that I'm friends with who have been overseas in the thick of it. A lot of them veterans. I've gotten to ask them. Off instead of just, I love notebook and pen, I love open conversations, but I've been blessed to have them at the facility and what if it to death, right? Like EP, successful EP is what ifing to death because it's risk mitigation. So I've gotten
Right.
to actually be in front of them. I had Tyler Gray at the facility at one point, which is really cool. I love that SEAL Team show is like classic TV drama as it is.
I'll say
Step.
there were parts of it that were really good. There was, and I know it's not anything Tyler probably had control over. There were some parts of it that were just really just unbearable for
Oh
me.
yeah. So they have to go cheese balls. They have to.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. It's just,
Because it
yeah,
was on
for
a
me,
network too, you know, like
it's just so hard to be like super geeked one episode and you're like, dude, that's a Spiritus Mark IV chest rig. Like, I know that gear. Like, you see stuff that you recognize and you're like, the weapon handling was good and and stuff like that. I think it was on CBS, right? And then you would like flip over an hour later or a day later, whatever, and you'd have like SWAT on there. And it's like the worst weapon handling, those little hockey pucks that light up that they used as like door charges and shit. And I'm like, how do you go from doing it so right to doing it so just obnoxiously wrong?
I feel like that's it. Too many chiefs, not enough Indians is what happened there. That
I don't know what the fuck that was, but that one was even, I will, because we're talking about TV, SWAT as a TV show, great concept, horrible execution, super political with every story. Every storyline is like white supremacists and sexist tendencies within police departments. I'm like, couldn't you guys just like change it up for a minute, please? We have like 5 or 7 seasons of the same shit over and over. It'd be great to see something new.
No, I agree. I agree. I was my mom got me into that SEAL Team show and like Lioness. So it was
I like
crazy
that one.
though. It was a trip that my mentor Aaron Malden, who yeah, that's not private information. He owns Catalyst Training Group. He grew up with Tyler Gray. And Tyler, when he got out of Delta, when Delta was ending, he came to Vegas and did EP. And a lot of people don't know he was a private driver. He was on a private team for, I don't even remember the client. I couldn't say, but he was with someone for a long time. And after his like injury that the show SEAL Team didn't really show, his injury is pretty substantial. And the fact that he mustered through all of the, what even what SEAL Team is as a show, and he still wanted to be involved and still teaches because we actually did a CQB MUT class with him. And it was awesome because I got to ask him like, hey, what worked in the field, right? He was an open book, which a lot of people like we talked about earlier, like, hey, some things are going to be off limits. That man, like, is if you speak to him, he's just a dude. Like we ate Subway together and just shot the shit forever. He was 30 minutes late back to lunch because he just wouldn't stop talking to me, which was cool. He just didn't care, because he's a celebrity now. It's not just a regular guy like he is. But having that again, like I call it cheat codes. I remember back in the day, like GTA, when you can get, a mash button left, right, square, and you could have unlimited ammo. I've gotten to do that with a lot of people because a long time ago, my parents, and my parents-in-law also taught me that like your network eventually will be your net worth. And I've never forgotten that. And I've made big efforts and I'm not perfect and I fuck it up all the time and I fucked up relationships before and friendships. But I try to like really harness network to like, hey man, I call it the mutual back scratch, especially in EP, you have to call a lot of audibles. And sometimes you have to ask for a favor. And I always tell people, like, if you ever do something or ask something, you best believe when you call to punch in that IOU, like, I'm gonna show up. Like, it's gonna happen no matter what. And I don't talk about that a lot. People have just that has just been kind of what I do. And the person that connected us knows that too. That's why I think, like, they know I vouch for them and they'll vouch for me.
Yeah.
It's a good dude who I went and met. And a couple of those guys, his entire company too. I love those guys. So I'm super, super happy that I always, like, you now too, like, right? It's like a diversification. What was that word you used that I freaked amalgamation? God, what a
Amalgamation.
word. What a word, by the way. Damn. I
Yeah.
wrote that down because I was like, holy crap.
Yeah, there you go. That's a $5 word. There you
Damn, dude, it
go.
is. I thought diversification was good. I'm like, damn it. That to me now is like, okay, now that we've talked, now my network opens up to you naturally and yours. And it's just, I love that. Like, that to me is where this ends for me. It's in the training side only and in, like, the networking brokering, right? I think that word really will resonate with you and your work. But brokering people together. And yeah, it would be, it's great to have a fee and everything else, but, like, it really, like, makes me feel that sense of completion of when someone has a problem or an issue and I don't know what to do, or maybe, like, what I said doesn't work, and I'm like, well, I got a guy. Or, by the way, I got 10 dudes. Like, what kind of guy do you want to talk to?
It's
And
always
that's
cool to be able to be that connection for people based off of like just interaction, just being like a decent human, having conversations like, and it's rare. But to that, like to that point too, I think that's why it's so weird that we have so many people in this community that are the opposite of that. You know, they only want to function within their, how can I say this? They only want to function in their echo chamber of the community. So and it's
Okay.
like, well, you may have thought, you may think you have everything figured out, but you know, give it 5 years, give it 10 years, you won't be relevant anymore. You just won't. I mean, and if that's all you give yourself is that little bit of space to grow, you're not going to, and you're kind of your own undoing. So I think from a self-preservation standpoint, it makes sense, but also just from like, it's so fickle, you know, like just enjoy what you're doing and get something really out of it rather than just like the materialistic, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the hype and clout, as we all know, has just become such a thing. And when I first got into this, like, I'll be the first to say, like, I was on that train. Like, let me buy the shirt, let me buy this, that, and the third. But something
Yeah,
I
so then
it's every
everyone's going to know you're about it, man.
yeah. And when I say what I'm about to say to people, I always get the same thing. So I'm gonna look at the phone because I could see your face. Every time I say this, people are like, "What?" And I'm like, my least favorite part about this whole world is shooting and carrying a gun. And people are like, "What?" And I'm like, "Do I carry one because of my duty for myself and my family and what I do for a living? Absolutely. Am I afraid of it? Nope. Am I decent with it? Yeah, I am not John Wick. Don't want to be. I don't care. I've only had, like, the first time ever this year. I'm like, hey, by the end of the year, when fall comes, I'm going to try to do competition shooting for the first time.
There you go.
But otherwise, like, yeah, I don't, that is not the sexy nitty gritty to me at all. And it's, to me, in this world, in this industry, it is the smallest portion and percentage of success. Like, if you could be a great shooter and you can punch holes in your holes nonstop, that's great. But if that's all you can do, you are not an asset to anyone or my team. Like, it's not going to get you very far. And like you said, the hype, like, God, dude, you don't even have to give it 5, 10 years anymore. You give it 90 days, 6 months, a year. And if people aren't growing and learning and they just have the same filters on and they're doing the same thing in a different direction, like, okay, great. Like, I love to watch it about three times.
And it's a man, I think you nailed it. Like some of this stuff really does turn on a dime when you look at the public perception, court of public opinion, when you look at some of the stuff that's happened to you know, I'm not going to use names, right? But you look at just some of the backlash that certain personalities have gotten for things they've done in their personal life. That pendulum swings back super fast, as well as actual just on the training side of things, right? Trends And it's weird. Like, see, people don't see it when they first start, you know, but once you break like that 3 year, 5 year, whatever mark within your training journey, being a part of the community, whether as a student or an influencer or a personality or whatever, right? You start to see some of these things come swing back around, right? Like we got to the point of, excuse me, everyone's running super tall optic mounts because that's what they think you're supposed to do. And then now it's swinging back. You see people advocating for the opposite. Hey, you should go back to absolute height. And it's like, well, we did that like 20 years ago, and you know, there's a reason we got away from it. And like, no, but there's a reason we should go back to it. And in some ways things are cyclical that way. But yeah, to your point, sometimes it's 90 days, sometimes it's 3 years, sometimes it's 5 years or but everything has a shelf life. And I think it shows that people are always trying to innovate and trying to find a better way to achieve you know, that level of proficiency or performance, whether that's in, like you said, in shooting or hand-to-hand skills. I mean, how observation is a skill that's got to be honed and worked on. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff I'm sure that goes into that where you can pick up things and it's just constantly evolving.
Surveillance and counter surveillance. I got a good shout out to another guy I've trained with, and I do all his I mean his threats for all his training in Vegas. So if anyone ever comes out, you get to see what kind of acting we do for the op four, the force on force. And I don't break character, and I am such an asshole. It's great. Joe LaSorsa, a lot of stuff he does on the East Coast of Miami, he is fantastic. And his bug sweeps and his counter surveillance and his medical is so fine-tuned. It's amazing. I suggest if anyone could ever train with LaSorsa to definitely do it. And if you're out here, I'll be attached to that. So it's a good time to meet. And yeah, we apply maximum pressure for these students. And he is such a humble dude. And just when he talks, you listen. That's the best way I could say it. And he does not have a sales pitch. People look at his class and I'm like, it costs this much. And I'm like, should cost more. Because by the time you're done, you're getting so much value from one human. And then he opens himself up, as long as you're not just a piece of crap, he opens his network up to you. Like if you finish a class and you're already on a team, great. But if not, you're like, hey, I'm looking for something, he connects you with people right away. Like he will get you multiple interviews. He's fantastic.
And that's the like hidden value behind, I think, some of the training opportunities that people don't seek out for themselves. We talk a
Absolutely.
lot, you know, in the 2A space about, oh, I want to find a training group, I want to find guys to go shoot with. And the two responses every influencer gives is go hang out at your local gun shop, which I think is terrible. Like my local gun shop sucks. They're nice people, but I would never want to shoot with the old fucks that I see in there looking at their 12th hunting shotgun and, you know, their Weatherby and whatever strange caliber. And then it's like, oh, go take classes. And classes, I think, are, you know, A, you're learning a skill set. So you're getting better on your own, whether you walk away with a connection or a networking opportunity or not. But then you can also see how those people perform. There's some people you probably don't want to connect with. They're like, hey, man, you're just flat out unsafe or potentially cognitively impaired. I don't want to train with you. But then you have those opportunities, like you connect through the instructors, through your classmates and stuff. It's a huge miss that I think people still want to pursue the in any avenue, right? The I'm going to teach myself through YouTube route rather than just go, you know, pay somebody for their knowledge. Like you're not paying for their time, you're paying for what they know. And in a lot of these instances, it's you're getting it at a discount.
No, 100%. We have a big class actually. It's coming in February. It's from February 10th to 13th. It got extended by 2 extra days. It's with Mike Marsh. But the biggest thing is people like they hit me with it. And I tell people like, hey, just be you could be transparent. Like, ask me why it costs so much. And then once I'm like, hey, there's three doctors that are going to either show up in person or show up via Zoom, and they're going to talk to you about their different skill sets. And one of them has a great product called the Slishman Wrap. He's a doctor with
Oh yeah.
no background, no
Sam
background with
Slishman.
us.
Yep.
Sam. Yeah. So that doc is fantastic. And every time we talk, we learn more about each other and he's so intrigued by executive protection in the private sector space. And we get Travis Kaufman, who's got a wild set of skills, including being one of the main medics for anything POTUS related.
Oh
It
shit.
is, yeah, and he has that on LinkedIn, so I'm allowed to say that. And another guy, Sam, who does a ton of stuff in Washington. from second graders and middle school, elementary to Stop the Bleed to all the way to training SWAT teams and SF and all that, because he comes from that world. So when it gets all that and it's, hey, Mike Marsh is a SWAT medic and he's what I call a tactical garden gnome. And I definitely did not steal that from Warrior Poet Society, John Lovell. But yeah, it's such a diverse, I'm like, and you're paying for this? And like, you think that's a lot? And then they're like, holy crud. I'm like, yeah. And then transparency, we take a step further. We're like, let me show you overhead. Like, I don't care about that. What sets us apart is we want to be honest with our students, to always show them like, hey, yeah, don't get me wrong, we're here to make money and make a living, but we just want people to walk away better because we saw a gap. I've seen a gap with the things that I've wanted to be involved in and wanted to change. And I've been the guy screaming from the bleachers and no one listens. And now, whether one person shows up to when we used to do CQB clinics, which is like $40 a night, you show up for 6 hours and it was nonstop scenarios. A little bit of instruction if you were green, but nonstop, just stressed, what we call, we everything we do is stress inoculation. So we're screaming at you. There's music going. There's dudes that are, they're pressing you. You don't know if they're armed or not. Like, we throw you into everything. And people are like, oh, you know, like $40. And I'm like, what? Like, I was so lost. And I
That's
learned really.
actually that's a dude that's a, I don't mean to cut you off. That's a deal.
No.
Like I pay
Yeah.
for the place here. It's $10 for 2 hours and it's got none of that. It's not to shit on the place, but it's the best thing that we have up here. It's a laser tag facility that after hours has a once a week session where people can come in and work on stuff. And that's not, you know, I mean, so we have a couple of times you turn off the lights or whatever. You can do night vision stuff in there once in a while because there's a handful of us that have nods. But like, that's a pretty rare thing. And to get a 6 hour session, that's totally worth $40. You know, I
Yeah.
would pay that, you know, in a heartbeat.
Yeah, we got to, we had the first set of American Range walls. They were called Blue Walls 2 years ago. Our owners met them at SHOT Show and they kind of rebranded. And they're great. If I could have them all black or all gray, I would, but I don't really care. They are recycled reinforced cardboard that are 20 pounds, I think, and they move on the fly. You can make half walls, full walls, and we have 40 of them. So we can make an endless amount of situation scenarios. With once our barn door closes and you exit, it takes us 60 seconds to rewrite the whole thing. Like, that's how quick it is. So you get so much. It's not just, you know, we're doing the same, respectfully to everyone, we're doing the same thing with that plywood over and over and over, and we're just moving things. No, we get to, I could have you enter, and then if I'm like, hey, you're gonna do a secondary, and you gotta exit, and then now I just change the hallway that you leave in. It's that great. And people, they hear it and they dismiss it, and then they go there and they're like, oh, okay. And I'm like, yeah, like, it's not a sales pitch. We're not making money every time we say this company's name at all. They just are great. And I've seen, I don't know where War Club trains, but I've seen them somewhere they've been in with content. I'm like, oh, that's so cool that these guys, like, they need the recognition, because this is a fantastic product that allows you, like, we shot the living crap out of them with Airsoft and Sims, and they'll fly in and get stuck, but my walls aren't falling apart. They're not destroyed to oblivion. Like, they could take it. They are fantastic. But that, yeah, that, like, I learned quickly, and I'm sure I'm going to hear something about this, but I learned really quickly that locally, the people that create a bunch of content here and the people that really want to train and are hungry for it, they're far and few in between. And it's super unfortunate because, like, you know, SHOT Show's held here and there's a lot of companies out here that I'm pretty sure people can see where they ship from when they get shirts and all that stuff. And I've had really good interactions. I've met a lot of them. So I'm not talking a bunch of mess on them or anyone, but it's really unfortunate that, like, a lot of our students, even so far, 2 days of our class sold out. They're all from Cali and Texas. I'm like, how are these people hungrier than locals?
I think people take it for granted because,
Yeah,
like,
they do.
honestly, here we don't in Michigan, we just don't have a lot of access to stuff like that. Dude, we had a Ryan training group up here the last 2 years for a 3 day class and a 2 day class. The 3 day class was 16 spots, and I think that sold out in like under a month. And then they came back this past year. They did a 2 day course. They added 4 spots to it. and opened it up to 20. They ended up actually taking 24 because they had so many people reaching out asking to add to it. And that actually, I think, sold out in under 3 weeks.
Wow.
We had people driving from outside the Chicago area, which is, I think, like 5 or 6 hours. We had guys from Northern Ohio coming up. I know in class we've had guys come up from like Northern Indiana and stuff. And it's guys that drove from like the bridge from like the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. So it's like a 4, 4.5 hour drive down to where we're at. And yeah, I mean, it's people will drive for access. People will travel for access to good facilities, good trainers, good information. It just, yeah, I mean, I think when you're just like developed and grown up around it, so to speak, right? Like I think Tennessee probably sees a lot of this too, because they have so many great companies in this space there. Yeah, it's like people are like, eh, I can go do that whenever I want. And they're not the ones that are out there attending classes. And it's like, dude, people in Michigan would kill for what you guys have. Like I'll tell you, it's rough up here trying to find access to people and facilities like what you just rattled off.
Yeah, it's hard. It's because you don't want to take it personal, right? You don't want to think, and some of it is throughout the years, but it is like you said. I think it is 100% where like, oh, I could do that whenever, so I won't. And it's like, all right, well, not only that is I've actually had a few students reach out that they were really scared at first, because they just saw like Instagram, and they got in person and realized like all we do is talk shit to each other, make jokes. In person, as you'll probably experience, like I hardly use my regular voice. I'm either quoting something, doing some kind of impersonation. Yeah, I'm madness. It's chaos. So I'm like, I'm not like that is curated content, but I'm like, I don't use my name. I don't use any of that because that's not my complete personality. That's just what I'm kind of do to what I create is FOMO. Like, what is this person doing? And yeah, like I will answer if someone's like, "Ooh, what do you do?" Like I'll pop in and say, I won't say where and stuff, but I'll give them that spiel, and then I'm like, "Dude, come meet and hang out." And then people do, and my students know all the time. Even when I got to go to DC not too long ago, and I told them, "Reach out whenever." And at the very end, they came up and like, "Oh, can I have your number?" I was like, "Yeah, this is not that you sign up and I do this whole thing and then I go out and say good luck in the world." Like, no, this is where you can come ask questions. Pick my brain. I don't care if it's gear. I don't care if it's tactics. I don't care if you want a piece of advice. Like nothing bothers me. I don't have that problem yet, at least. Don't know if I ever will of my phone. Like I can't keep up with things. But because I keep it organic and I have a pretty wide spread of people that I work with, I feel like I can kind of dictate those responsibilities accordingly. But I won't turn people away. There's no, I say it all the time, man. The dumb question when I ask officers, students, hey, do you have any questions? And I tell them the dumb question you think is the one that you don't ask and you make yourself look stupid for later. That is the dumb question. It's not the one that you're like, well, maybe you said this. Like, I don't care. I'll say it 200 different times. And maybe I could say it differently. Or maybe I can ask someone else to say it because you're going to hear it differently because we all retain information and hear things, But yeah, that access is another difference that like you named a few like Orion. I've never trained with them. I've gotten to talk and talk shop with them a couple times, and that's super rad. And CoreVision, like they give you that access, and that I think is missing. It's deeply, deeply missing now in this community because it has become about how cool you can look and how much you spent on this, that, and the third. And I've had students like you, we said this earlier, but in a different context. I've had students that they're really limited financially or where they live that they couldn't take some classes and they finally did and they came out. And I'm like, hey, man, like you don't suck. Like, what are you doing to be at like this level? Because you needed critiques. You didn't need necessarily full widespread instruction. And they said, like, I watch a lot of YouTube. And I'm like, well, you must take it really serious to the point of like choreography because you don't look dumb and you don't fumble foot and you don't look lost and you don't look like you're not thinking. And it's impressive because that like those tools that I feel like damn us a lot, social media and YouTube and everything, they're still good in there. And I get really jaded, I said it earlier, towards these things that I'm still using. But there is good to find in them still, and we have to use those. I mean, in the end, that's what brought you and I to now have this conversation is the beauty of a network and social media and things like that. And being a fan again, like what a trip, like what a cool moment to be sitting in the seat over here. So
Yeah, I mean, there is value there still, I think when I took my very first class, it was at a range here in Ann Arbor, so University of Michigan area, and I had guys approach me. They're like, "This is your first class? Like you didn't I didn't look like it was my first class." I mean, there were things that kind of gave it away, like I didn't know how to properly size my battle belt, so after I started moving, it was kind of sliding down my ass and everything. Shit like that that you don't really get exposed to when you're dry firing in your basement a ton. but you can. To your point, you can gain a whole lot through simple repetition and a desire to improve. Now, are you going to get as good as fast? No. And you may not get where you want to be, but a simple, I think, a desire to improve and the disciplined practice and approach to certain things will get you way further, I think, than some people realize, which is also why it's so maddening when you see people show up to courses and they're like, "This is my life, man. Like, I love this shit. I always want to be prepared to protect my family." And then you see them and it's like, "Dude, you look like a monkey trying to fuck a football. Like, what are you serious?" And I would never react that way and say that to someone. I mean, well, it would take a lot. I should say that. It would take a lot for me to come out and say something like that to a person who's attending a class trying to get better, but like I've been in several classes. I've only taught one as an assistant instructor, and every time there is that person, you can pick them out sometimes without even having to talk. But
Oh, yeah.
like you just you know what I'm talking about. Like they're just like either they're dripping in kit, and it's like you need to spend less money on kit and more time either in the gym or on training or whatever. Are there guys that like, dude, your shit's just like all over the place, man. You don't have one fucking a clue as to what you're doing. And it's like, I respect the hustle, man, but like, dude, what the? We had one guy show up to the class that I helped teach, and I was like, "All right, man, you're gonna be a real special case today." I could just. It sounds like such a dick thing to say, but it's true. Like, I don't know if you about you as like an educator or a trainer. Like, you start to be able to read people, and you're like, "All right, I'm gonna have to say it twice for you," and then
Oh, yeah.
you just know that you keep that in the back of your mind, like. All right, he just needs a little help. That's okay. But you can do a lot on your own. You really can.
Yeah, like, I mean, again, I know I don't, it would take a lot, like you just said, to say something, but usually, like, as instructors for our little breaks, for bathroom breaks, usually on lunches, we wouldn't really kind of like, hey, where do you think we're losing them? Where do you think we're at? Do you think, let's go down the list. And we'll say, like, we call them, we're like, hey, that guy's going to be on our short bus. Like we just say it, like that's what it is, and we gotta, as an educator, it is our responsibility to then meet them where they're at. It is not our responsibility to sit here and be like, oh well, we fuck, fuck it, he already paid, blah blah blah. And sometimes there is that person who's just not gonna get it, or they don't care, right? They just really don't care. It's just about attending, and they're gonna post about it for fucking the next year. But if it's your responsibility, and in all those, again, the diversified background, like I'm really fortunate that I can read people and have to on the fly fast, and I have to meet them where they're at. Because yeah, I can't, like, hey, you're paying me to come here and learn something, and then I'm just gonna be like, well, you just couldn't get it. Like, absolutely not. Like, there's zero, there is that is so irresponsible to me. But like you said, there are people who show up and they're just like, right, they're just there to check the box off, and you're like, right, cool, I'm not gonna take it personal. It's going to suck for you because we're all going to have a good time, and I'm going to run my mouth, and the students are going to get real comfortable. And I've had people on lunch break or on day two not return. And just like,
Seriously.
yeah, and that's
Yeah.
it.
All
Like,
right.
not even say anything. Not even like, hey, something came up and, BS it, like straight up gone. And I'm like, what a wild concept. Like, okay. But yeah, and
I've seen that happen one time, but he didn't like just walk out. He told the instructor, he was like, it was a concealed carry fundamentals course, and he told him he didn't feel comfortable and left.
wow.
Which, well, okay, so context here, that like stuff transgressed after that that made it make sense. He got stuck, think it's like an indoor range, right? And they just let you go past the benches, so you essentially have like a 25 yard open range.
Okay.
He was consistently stuck in line next to one of the ladies in class, and she kept having issues, like, on the timer beep, we're all gonna start walking forward, placing rounds on the target. I forget what the specific drill was, or backwards, right? And just make sure you're staying on line with each other. This lady, as you're going backwards, she's always in front of the line. As you're going forward, she's always behind the line. You're like, okay, come on, like, fucking figure it out, ma'am. Come to find out, she's blind in one eye, which is why she had
Oh
a
my
visible laser on her Glock
goodness.
42 or her Glock 43. And this guy got stuck next to her every time. And I was like, yeah, nope. This may, I mean, it's also weird. He brought like a SIG 938 or whatever, like a little tiny little 9mm 6+1 little micro compact gun. And he was like 6'7". I was like, okay, so you're the biggest dude here with the smallest gun like imaginable. Strong move, buddy. But whatever, if that's what you carry, like cool. And so yeah, as things continued on through the day, I was like, and we found out about that, I was like, oh yeah, I might have ducked out too, or at least gone to the instructor, been like, can we, whatever eye sucks, can we put her against that wall, and then like we don't have to worry about this anymore. But
Yeah,
yeah, I've only ever
absolutely.
had somebody bail one time, at least for just one of those reasons. We had a guy at the class I just taught, his car got hit being parked in the street overnight, so he had to stay home and deal with that the second day. But you know, that's just life.
Yeah, that's life. Classic.
But I did want to ask, well, you know, because this is, I think it's somewhat relevant. And I don't know if you even have a lot of insight, because I know we're kind of starting to press time here. But I did want to ask, with your experience with security and just everything, you know, Vegas, the Strip, with the Vegas shooting that happened, I want to say it was 2016, 2017, something
Yeah,
like
I think
that.
October 1st.
Yeah, how did that change? And I don't even know if you were in Vegas at that time, but how did that impact the work that you guys do today? Was there any, in any industry, when you have disruptive events like that, there's always reactionary measures that are taken. But how did that change things for you guys after all that went down?
So that was it was the classic reactionary, right? Like overzealous, everyone, everything's a threat, and I understand when that wound's fresh. What I'll say is people, they got on the right path, and as it slowed down, where they should have had their found their happy median, is where it went really wrong the last few years. And I think a lot of the contributions for that was COVID, because COVID was the first time in the history of the city that the Strip shut down. Like these properties, like October 1st did not shut down Mandalay Bay. It did not shut down the Strip. It was high stress and everything else, but they were still operating. But COVID, and I don't like to get in the nitty-gritty to of COVID. And October 1st is very interesting because I have a lot of opinions on that. It never made sense to me. That's my most vanilla way to say that. It's never going to make sense to me. I mean, working, being in those rooms with that glass, there's a lot of factors, but that median that they found, I feel like COVID disrupted that of what that great I talked about earlier. No one has that bar of like, hey, we set the standard, and I mean anywhere in the city, it's weird. Like no one has it. Like, oh, dude, they do it like this. Like, damn, I got to get my team up to there, or damn, I got to get better than them because they're the gold standard. Like, there's no one. There's companies, post on LinkedIn and do their thing and their marketing and their recruitment, but there's no one I look at that I'm really over the top impressed with, which is concerning. It's concerning and a little bit sad. And I feel like we're at that cusp where right now, where I'm seeing, like, I browse everything, right? So I browse LinkedIn when my company's hiring to see the numbers on who's applying, and then the other positions for other companies of how many people are actually applying or clicking it, et cetera. And there is a decline because this city has such an influx of California, and the price of things is getting to that point where there's like that tip, and the pendulum swinging really heavy on one side that they've got to do something. They've gotten, unfortunately, what they want no one to know is they've gotten away with hiring bodies for a long time since COVID. They've gotten away with it. And we're getting to a place where crime is up 95% just on the casino side and the Strip side. And that includes
Jesus
property
Christ.
damage, theft, and violent crimes. Yeah, I imagine those numbers are even higher on LVMPD, who is short. Sex trafficking, there's a lot of different factors in there that I feel like we're going back to that, where we got to take this serious. And I'm happy to be a part of that. I'm sad that it's come to that again. I'm sad it's the classic cut corner thing, and then we'll get away with it, and then suddenly things will get really bad, and we'll all say that we were, screaming from the bleachers. And we're headed towards that. And in the EP world too, there's a big standstill because the Mark Wahlberg had his big production company coming. Was really close by to where I live, actually, and that whole thing got stopped by the city, and I don't know what happened. I had a feeling it has to do with the Aviator Stadium. Can't confirm, but now I guess it's coming back. So now they're going to vote on it one more time, and if that hits, the amount of RST, so the residential teams that are going to come, the EP teams that are going to grow in size, there'll be SRT on that production studio. There'll be access control. There's going to be every factor, right? There's going to be a GSOC. I'm interested to see how that goes, and that's going to kind of boom us again. But I have had this. I've had a lot of talks with management lately on my team of like, it's going to take, I hope it's not October 1st, but it's going to take something bad. We all thought it was going to be New Year's, which New Year's Eve went off without a hitch, which was
Yeah,
great.
thank God. Yeah.
But it's going to take something, unfortunately, for everyone to go, you know what? I think maybe we should take this serious again. And again, sad that it's come to that. Happy to be a part of that growth because I'm not going to sit there and be like, well, you guys lost your chance and, the ship sailed. No, I'm still here and I hope to influence them to whatever degree. And like you said something earlier, like are these teams connected, right? And I get certain things, right? We're all competing, but I do believe there needs to be some kind of board or something that we all can sit down and talk shop and train different properties and companies, even if it's like, hey, these are how, let's talk about our SOPs, let's talk how we can better them and learn something instead of just like, well, that's a different company, so like, I'm competing, I don't want to have anything to do. I feel like that's so
Right.
dumb. I don't have any other word, but so dumb.
Yeah. Well, I think, well, there's good and bad with it. When you give a governing agency or body control over stuff like that, I'm just thinking about like tactical officers associations in other states. I know here in Michigan, I love to support police officers in my state. I'm not necessarily a fan of our TOA here for some different reasons that I won't get into. But like hopefully it's a productive standard if they're able to put that in place where it can help, rising tide raise all ships type deal versus something that just mitigates liability and makes it easier to graduate people into these roles and positions like we've seen, in law enforcement. But
Yeah, I want the my short answer for that is for them to just come to the facility. You don't have to, you could say where you're from, right? But you're not representing that company or property, and everyone can learn and talk shop, and it's kind of that meeting ground. It's a neutral party.
yeah. Well, man, I know we're pushing the time we have here. I really appreciate just being able to sit down and chat and everything, get to know you, man. If people have questions, is there a place they can, I know you teach a couple places and things like that we talked about. Where can people get a hold of you if they have questions on anything we've talked about here, or maybe they just want to look at an opportunity to come out, connect with you, take a class, things like that.
Yeah, so LVTC out here. I'm not running that page right now. Just came so busy with things. But my I don't usually do this, but for the sake of this, because yeah, this is kind of a new step for me, and I'm excited. But you guys can follow me. Instagram is the only thing I have. If it's LinkedIn, then we already know each other professionally, so I'm not really going to shout that. But if you guys want to find me and normalize and posing, that's my thing on there. Should be me with I think I'm wearing nods because I'm trying to be real tactical Timmy on there. But yeah, that's the easiest spot.
Gotta wear the nods and flex on the pores. So, you gotta do it. And honestly, I feel bad saying that I do because they're prohibitively expensive, but they're so much fun. They really
Yeah, they
are.
are. I do that on the side too. I'm an NVG dealer, so if anyone wants a plug for that, or yeah, I don't
There
know
you go.
everything with that. I got, again, I have SMEs for that, but I'm good at the brokering networking part, so just kind of a back pocket thing.
Have to ask a quick question here. Do you have a preferred housing or what do you run for night vision? What do you recommend?
The 1431S's and the White Foss have to be my favorite. I think articulation is so undervalued. And they're really light, and I've got like what 1800 FOMA on these things, and they are so crispy. I have like, it's the weirdest thing. Like when you're really sleepy and you see like dust in your eye and you're like, where is that thing? I have like the tiniest blem that kind of just appears and disappears. So who I deal with, I know a few companies, but who I deal with is ICE equipment, which is such a great in contact equipment. But those guys know way more than me. Yeah, they're great. So if anyone has any questions, and I run an Argus mount on there, that's way cheaper and Way less lead to break than a Wilcox.
Yeah, and way harder to get last couple of years too, which
Oh
sucks, but
man. Yeah, they are. They are.
yeah. Well, cool, man. Like I said, this has been awesome. We'll definitely have to find an opportunity to do this again, and hopefully actually connect while I'm in town in a couple of weeks here. So, really appreciate it, man. Stay safe, and we'll be in touch, man.
Yeah, thank you, man. Thanks so much for having me.
So, I would definitely say that that was probably one of the more unique discussions that we've had here on the podcast. Certainly. I mean, like, if you talk about concepts, right? We've talked about executive protection before. We've talked about training. We've talked about education and students, and a lot of the stuff that Gabe and I were able to get into there, right? But I don't think have ever really gotten into how all of those worlds, right, intersect. And I think that it's a very unique opportunity if you're working in the Vegas area, and certainly it's because Vegas, I think, is a unique city all its own, right? Because I mean, the gambling, the nightlife, the entertainment, the collection, right, of high net worth individuals that seem to collect there. And that's outside of everything else, right? So you have people that are, millions and millionaires, right, that are there just to vacation and take advantage. Then you have people that are there for trade shows and events. You have people that have residencies in some of these hotels, right? Like Donny Marie Osmond and Wayne Newton. It's a lot of, older stuff, Carrot Top, but then Blue Man Group. And in conjunction with all of that, where you're talking about like executive protection of a singular figure, you're also talking about the size of audiences that those people bring together, and then being able to prevent anything bad from happening, right, in those kinds of gatherings. And that's in addition to like the daily ongoings of just, I don't want to say regular security, but things that can happen in a casino. So it all just like, comes together. And it's crazy that in such a short period of time, I know 12 years sounds like a long time. As somebody who's been in my career path for about 14 years, coming up on 15, I don't think it's that long. And some of the things that Gabe talked about at the beginning, he was on an SRT team, right? Dealing with gang activity. Not something that you would typically believe that you'd be running into. I think when you think of some kind of an SRT team in Vegas and stuff, you would think, oh, robberies, fraudsters, things like that, con artists, thing, where you're talking about like a illegal entry into rooms and larceny and things like that. Dealing with MS-13 does not exactly come to the top of my mind when I think about that. So hearing that that was something he dealt with at the very early onset of his career is wild to me. And he spent time as a youth corrections officer for, the criminally insane, cash transport, right? Which is any one of these things on their own are somewhat surprising and somewhat impressive in their own regards, right? When you start building this up into a career that leads into executive protection and then more, right? Like what we got into here, it's a lot, man. And I 110% would love to have him back on to talk about more of this stuff. I think it's really cool that I get to be able to drop this episode about a week in, about a week, maybe a week and a half before I actually will be in Las Vegas for SHOT Show. So many of us, a lot of you guys listening to this, will be in Vegas for SHOT Show, and we'll actually hopefully be able to think of some of these things as you're walking around whatever resorts, whatever property, right, that you're staying at. And maybe, you think differently of some of the people that you see there, right? Some of these security individuals and stuff like that. I mean, whether that's like I'm gonna be staying at the Flamingo, right, which is a very, very old property on the Strip and basically towards the center of everything. I think I have friends staying at Treasure Island. I don't know if I have anybody staying at the Wynn. I don't know why that came to mind. I think somebody else is staying at like Trump Tower, which is somewhat off the Strip, right? Whatever. But just the wide just swath, right, of things we got into with this discussion. Really, really cool, and so close to SHOT Show as well. So I'm definitely gonna be hitting up Gabe and picking his brain, like, hey man, what are, as a local, right, like what are the good spots to like check out for food and stuff, because I'll be traveling with my wife and I want to make sure she has a good time with this as well. My only regret is we're there for like 3 days. If there was an opportunity to like get together and go train out there, I might make that a priority trip in the next year or two here. Go out there and take advantage of LVTC and stuff like that, and connect with Gabe, do some of those things, because I say this all the time here on the podcast, and I really do mean it. Michigan is a black hole for training. there is nothing good within reasonable driving distance of the state. So by reasonable driving distance, I mean within 2 hours of me. There's really not anything that's a dedicated training center. If you go to like 2.5, 3 hours, yes, there's a couple options. You start getting like 4, 4.5 hours, it gets a little bit better, right? You're talking about being able to reach Pennsylvania, Ben Franklin Range and stuff like that. But here in Michigan, there's really not a ton outside of some decent ranges where you have actual training centers. And it's kind of a shame because I think we do have a really good community for it in the state. There just isn't, there's not a lot of options. So all of that said, you guys, I do hope that you enjoyed the discussion with Gabe. If you have specific questions, you can reach out to me, you can reach out to him. If you guys enjoyed this, please hit the subscribe button. Check us out on our other platforms too. I'm dropping a video this weekend on the YouTube channel, pushing towards 5,000 subscribers. Like, that really blew up in the last month. And it's super cool to watch that all grow right in front of me. Like, did not think that was going to happen. If I can hit 5,000 subs before we hit February, I might have to look into doing a giveaway. That might be a really, really cool thing. But at any rate, you guys, thank you so much for listening. I do hope that this was entertaining and hopefully enlightening in different ways. I got a cool guest lined up for next week, and then we're at SHOT Show, baby. It's going to be a really, really exciting couple days coming up here for me. So appreciate you guys all for listening. Please, please stay safe out there. And like we always say here, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.